These are elements they use continuously to resist and to harm critical voices who continue to stand up against misrule and bad governance.
Mohamed Jallo is the Secretary General of the Student Unification Party, or SUP. He spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. In Zambia, an independent parliamentarian says her one-week suspension from the lawmaking body for doing her job is not fair. Given Katuta was suspended for a week for leading a protest by walking out of parliament over remarks by a colleague, which she says were divisive and tribalistic. Katuta says she will continue her fight to bring development to her people, despite what she says appears to be a targeted plan by unknown forces to intimidate and harass opponents of the administration in parliament. She tells me that the speaker must be fair in carrying out her duties to prevent accusations of bias in favor of the government.
Actually, it's really shocking for me. What happened was that on the 14th of June, 2023, the Minister of Infrastructure was giving a ministerial statement regarding the deplorable state of the road of Mwinilunga. So when he was giving that statement, he gave a statement which was quite regional, and I'll take it as to be tribal. He said only northwestern and western provinces will be, you know, given development by the current government. And a few of my colleagues on the left-hand side of the speaker, we tried to, you know, to murmur, you know, seeing that what he said was just wrong, and seeing that we've been discouraging tribal remarks or regionalism. And I said, you know what, this man who dragged us into something that we don't know what his intentions are.
Are you saying because of what many are describing as tribalistic statement by the minister, the reason why you decided to lead the protest?
Yes, that's why I walked out. And I walked out when I walked out because of the speaker and the minister come from the same province. And the speaker will never rebuke anyone from UPND or anyone from a tribe. Whenever they would be insulting us, they'll call us names. Like they call me Lenshina, they call me a mad woman. She'll just ignore.
Weren't your insults tribalistic by nature? Per what you have said, Bembe's being the majority speaking language in Zambia?
I wasn't, because I realized that this, we've been experiencing this on the floor of the house. We've tried to stomach these regional and tribal remarks from the right-hand side towards us. And the speaker, not even a single day, she has rebuked anyone. I've got videos to that effect, which I can share with you. So when I stood up, I was blaming now my colleagues from our regions. My radio station got gutted because I was supporting UPND if I stood as an independent. But the way we've been treated like we're aliens from another planet, all because UPND has issues with PF. As long as you're a Bemba, and you know PF is associated with Bembas, you are all evil. And this is how we're being treated.
With your statement, are you therefore saying that the speaker has been biased, ruling in favor of the governing party?
I'm not even accusing her, and she has always been in support of the ruling party. And she has never rebuked anyone. The only thing that she did, she knew she was going to give me this. She's only did like a baby gloves treating, you know, massaging the Minister of Information. What the Minister of Information did was even worse, because you're not allowed to stand in front of the speaker, and she did that.
So what's your next line of action to get back to Parliament or the National Assembly?
No, I'm going back to Parliament. I'm still a member of Parliament. I'm going back to serve the people of Chiengi, and I'm going to insist, and I'll continue speaking on the issue of the road which has never been given to us. I want just to tell you something. Go on YouTube and check for the most dangerous road in Zambia. You find that it's Kashikeshi Chiengi Road. It's a death trap.
Given Katuta is an independent parliamentarian in Zambia. She spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Still in Zambia, the leader of the Association of Vendors is hailing the government's decision to remove all street vendors from the central business district of the capital, Lusaka. Frederick Tembo has also called on the government to further remove all street vendors across the country. The government's decision follows complaints that the vendors have filled up streets and are putting lives in danger. Some residents express concern that there are no sanitary facilities on the street and urge authorities to force the vendors into markets, which they argue have been empty. But the vendors and opposition groups say the authorities fail to give the vendors time to move elsewhere. Harry Calabar is the leader of the opposition group called Citizens First. He tells me that the actions of the authorities will impoverish the vendors.
The removal of vendors from the streets should have been guided by giving them notice. There could have been nothing wrong with governments giving notice of even at least a month before carrying out the exercise, as opposed to ambushing the citizens. I think the action is in bad taste. It's uncalled for, especially in a democratic dispensation such as ours. We need to be ordered, and these guys need to be ordered.
But there is the issue of sanity on the streets, because the vendors have filled up most streets, endangering the lives of people. Isn't the government right by taking this bold step?
Look, I think nobody is arguing with them, asking the vendors to go in markets, especially if they have given them market space. There's nothing wrong with that, because we need sanity indeed. But it is the modus operandi in which this action has been taken. These are human beings. Despite them being poor, they needed to be given time. They needed to be given notice that this action was going to be taken and that they had a deadline in which they should have taken that action. But for them to just wake up in the night, in the early hours of that day, to go and ambush their own citizens, that is bad governance. And it is akin. It belongs to the Stone Age and not in our times.
But Harry, these vendors knew that what they have been doing is illegal. The ruling party has talked about it. And we all know that there are no sanitary facilities on the streets and the markets are empty. So why wouldn't they just go to the market and do their business there rather than in the streets?
Look, it doesn't matter the color of the cats. For as long as the cats can catch the mice, that is okay. The point we are making as a political party is that government should have informed the citizens. They should have informed the vendors that on such and such a date, we are carrying out this action because what you are doing is illegal. No qualms with that. But it is those poor people losing their merchandise. It is taking them by surprise. Why should a government that was voted for by those same poor people take an action that is averse, an action that is totally throwing them into abject poverty? What should have happened for this government is to be proactive rather than being reactive. They should have brought out incentives like we have been advising them. We have been saying ourselves, let this government bring in measures like giving soft loans to people with stands in markets. Once you have a stand in markets, you use that stand as collateral to go and get a loan from a bank or from a financial institution. People naturally will just move from the streets to go into the markets and access those loans. But the way they have done it is unacceptable, it's uncalled for, and though the action might be positive because we need a clean city, we need a clean environment, it is the method in which it has been done. It is crude. It is inhuman. It's uncalled for a government that professes to be people-driven government. It clearly shows they are anti-poor people. It clearly shows that their interest is only with those who are rich and deep pockets and not the ordinary Zambians.
But Harry, are you not playing politics and taking advantage of the situation?
There is nothing bold about the government that ambushes its people in the night. There is nothing bold about the government that avoids a conversation with its own citizens. It's all cowardice. And listen to me, right? I leave playing mayor politics to lesser men. I am not for that. We are simply saying, why didn't you inform the people that on such and such a date, it should be your end day? You should stop trading on the streets and get your merchandise out. Why did you have to destroy the people's merchandise? Why? Because what is driving people is poverty on the streets. What is government doing to promote anti-poverty methodologies? What is government doing in empowering poor people? They're doing nothing. Because they're doing nothing, they want to take stances that are going to make them be in favorable terms with their rich friends. That is not the government we want. We want the government that will hear both the rich and the poor.
Harry Kalaba is the leader of the opposition group called Citizens First. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers at the European Southern Observatory say they may have spotted two exoplanets sharing the same orbit around its star, located about 370 light-years away. There are many celestial objects, such as asteroids and moons, that share the same orbit in our solar system. Using the ELMA radio telescope array, the scientists noticed a patch of debris that might be following an exoplanet twice the size of Jupiter called PDS-70b. The astronomers say this debris cloud could either be material that will form a new planet or the remains of one that already formed. While theorized by scientists years ago, this discovery may provide the first piece of evidence that planets can share the same orbit. The astronomers will check in on these possible co-orbiting planets again in 2026. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half, it's Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley. That will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from African Collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Defending champions of the Le Mans Du Ndigal Mountain Race in France, Patrick Kipchoge and Joyce Njeru of Kenya braved an intensely competitive lineup to retain their crowns on Saturday. Despite the presence of formidable opponents, including first-timers and past winners, both races resulted in thrilling finishes, with Kipchoge and Njeru securing victories. In the women's race, Joyce Njeru faced stiff competition from fellow Kenyan Filaris Kisang. The riveting race ended in Njeru winning in 2 hours, 6 minutes, 28 seconds, a slim 5 seconds lead over Kisang's 2 hours, 6 minutes, 33 seconds. In the men's race, Kipchoge was up against his Kenyan compatriot and last year's runner-up, Philemon Kirago. Patrick Kipchoge managed a consistent lead in the men's race, finishing first in 1 hour, 46 minutes, 44 seconds, with Philemon Kirago, also of Kenya, finishing in second place with a time of 1 hour, 48 minutes, 47 seconds, and Italy's Javier Chavira claiming the third spot in 1 hour, 51 minutes, 11 seconds. In basketball news, Mali bagged their 8th consecutive FIBA Under 16 Women's African Championship in Monastir, Tunisia on Sunday. Mali won the title after they defeated Egypt narrowly by 57 to 56 points. The two sides have now met in 6 finals since the championship was launched in 2009. In the men category, Guinea and Egypt are through to the final of the 2023 FIBA Under 16 African Championship. By reaching the final of the biennial African Championship, Guinea and Egypt also qualified for the 2024 FIBA Under 17 Basketball World Cup. Booking a place in the final was significantly historic for Guinea, as the West African nation will also, for the first time in the country's basketball history, be making it to the Under 17 Basketball World Cup. The 9th edition of the Francophone Games for French-speaking African countries is scheduled to take place from July the 28th to August the 6th. The games is taking place in Kinshasa, Democratic Republic of Congo, and brings together some 3,000 participants from over 30 French-speaking countries. The event was initially scheduled in 2021, 4 years after the latest edition in Côte d'Ivoire, but the COVID-19 pandemic changed plans. And now to water polo. The South African women's water polo team's challenge for a medal came to an end at the World Aquatics Championship in Fukuoka, Japan on Saturday. South Africa lost 21-6 to Canada in the playoffs. Canada will now face the Netherlands in the quarterfinals, while South Africa will drop into the playoffs bracket for a classification game where they will face France on Monday. And finally, Zambia's hope of a dream start to their maiden Women's World Cup campaign were shattered on Saturday after a 5-0 defeat by former champions Japan. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
Good evening, Africa. Last week, President Cyril Ramaphosa told the South African public and the rest of the world that after close consultation within the BRIC members, a decision was taken to propose that President Putin of Russia participate by video link and not to be on site in Johannesburg. This decision, a wise one in the context of the dogged persistence of one party in South Africa, the Democratic Alliance, to go to court and obtain a judgment that the South African government is obligated to arrest Putin if he should arrive in South Africa. There are those who do not really agree in the context of their perception that failure to satisfactorily resolve the issue of Putin's arrest may well overshadow the importance of the BRIC summit in Johannesburg. So despite double standards, they are coerced in this consensus. One, Africans must also take note that the Democratic Alliance, which have turned out to be the strong support of the ICC, remains silent, deafening silence, when former Secretary of State of the United States Pompeo, the name of the ICC, along with the former chief prosecutor and its staff, when it was discovered they were planning to hold investigation about United States military behavior in Afghanistan, as well as that of its close allies Israel in the occupied territory. The U.S. Secretary made it clear that they would sanction the ICC if they dared to proceed with the investigation, and they would block the entry of any member of the ICC in the United States. The reason why one should accept the wise decision is because this in South Africa, Johannesburg, is a credit to the continent and to the government of South Africa. Here was a government that was the last to join the BRIC and now going to host what may turn out to be a significant advance of BRICS. The South African government announced also last week that 22 members states of the Global South have requested membership in BRICS, including such heavyweights as South Africa, UAE, Egypt, Argentina, and others. So history will record if they decide this type of expansion at this summit. There is also a misinformation about what BRICS is all about. BRICS was formed after decades of efforts by the Global South to reform the IMF and the World Bank. These institutions, very worthwhile, very effective, was established in 1944, a year before the end of the Second World War in 1945. That time, almost all the members of the Global South were mere colonies of the European powers. That is why they have called for the reforms of these two institutions, particularly the IMF, because of its importance in development. But until today, no meaningful reform has been taken, the IMF and the World Bank. And this was the motivation of the establishment. Some have asked, what has the BRICS done since its establishment? And those who follow these things closely and not from time to time could say, yes, BRICS had achieved a great deal. First, by remaining united, even though some have tried to peel off one member after another. Also, BRICS has established the new development bank, which is headquartered in Beijing and now led by Madame Cousset, a former president or Brazil. So Africans everywhere should pay special attention to the proceedings of this conference, summit conference in Johannesburg. They should not allow themselves to be distracted by those who have great questions about the BRICS, or to be bamboozled by negative comments about BRICS by many others. I thank you.
That was one more point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
I go kill you with enjoyment, enjoyment, hey, enjoyment, 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 hey, I go kill you with.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Take me back to Candyland, where all my world. baby, you go love my crib. You must run my race, oh. Oh, I'm the one for you, you, you. Man, play, I take a bullet for you, you. Anything I do is for my baby, boo. Do for you, all my brain I go give for you, anything I will do for you, the love that make me the lazy, oh, the lazy, oh, I did the daddy, do, do, do. And it's only you that makes me alright, what will I do without you in my life, see good things that you bring for my life.
Our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the sun does not forget a village just because it's